There are certain questions that can be posed that require an either-or response. Such as, did the LSU Tigers win last night? That's a yes or no response, right? It's either yes or no. Will the New Orleans Saints win today? Again, yes or no. And it could end up in a tie, but the history of this franchise, very seldom do we end up in a tie. It's either win or lose. The question posed to Jesus today was meant to trip him up, but more than that, they were looking for something that wouldn't give them a reason to destroy Jesus at this point. Jesus is in the last days of his life in this Gospel of Matthew. And both the Pharisees and the Sadducees have about had it up to here with him. And we know that the situation has become dire when you have the disciples of the Pharisees actually colluding with the Herodians. The Herodians were those who had given allegiance and support to the Romans occupying the Holy Land. And so it happens, they come to him with this false sense of affirmation. Oh, we know that you are this one who teaches in the name of God. You do this and you do that. Tell us now, is it lawful to pay the temple tax or not? It's a double-edged sword to try to set him up. But Jesus sees straight through it. And he dispatches what they're trying to present as a divide. There is not really a divide between the Caesars of the world and God, because the truth of the matter is the reality of God is such that God pervades all of creation, visible and invisible. We say in one of our Eucharistic prayers, and the scripture itself says, in him, in God, we live and move and have our being. Everything comes from God. Everything returns to God. Isaiah confirms this. Living during the time of Babylonian exile in the year 587 BC, all of Jerusalem was destroyed. The Jewish people were taken into slavery to serve the Babylonians. But there was the rise of another in the Middle East, Cyrus, the king of Persia. In those times, Babylonians came out of what was known as what's today known as present-day Iraq. Persians came out of what's present-day Iran. So they come, and what does Isaiah, speaking straight to the political dynamics of the time, he says he sees in this the intervention of God. God allowing the Persians to overcome the Babylonians, which would happen 50 years after Babylonian captivity was established. And what happens? God gives Cyrus a heart that's lenient and benevolent towards the Jews. He tells them to go back to their land and construct this temple again to your God. Now, you ask Cyrus would see everything about his prosperity coming from his own abilities and so forth. But as it goes, God says, I called you. God has ordained for him to come into power. Whether he knows God or not, whether he accepts that or not, it is what it is. All things, as Romans 8:28 says, all things shall work together for the good of those who love the Lord and who have been called according to his will, his purpose, his plan. With that being said, we now gain insight about what Jesus is saying in response to the question. Render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar, give to God what belongs to God. Give me a coin. Now you know the irony of all of this. A truly faithful, observant Jew would literally not be caught dead with the currency, a coin that bears the likeness of a human being who has taken to himself the claim of divinity. That is idolatry, one of the greatest of all the sins. So, ironically, the Pharisees who pride themselves in being such sticklers for the law, crossing every T, dotting every I, they are able to produce the coin. Jesus doesn't have one. Give me a coin. Whose image is that? Caesar. Then give to Caesar what's his. Give to God what belongs to God. What belongs to God? What is it about us that we owe God everything? Why is that? Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. God created them, male and female. He created them in his very image, in his very likeness. What is the image of God that we contain? In our souls, we have four faculties: freedom, intellect, the ability to reason, imagination, and memory. When we exercise those faculties of the soul in accordance with the will of God, the ways in which God has made known to us to live in abundance of life, so as to be perfectly happy in the life yet to come, we are imaging him, and we are, in essence, presenting God-like attributes. God-like attributes. And as it is in this temporal space and time that we find ourselves in, we have a dual citizenship right now. Our true citizenship is in heaven. But for the time being, we are also citizens of Mother Earth. And therefore, as such, we ought to be respectful of the authority that God has allowed to reign over us. Jesus confirms this as he will be on trial before Pontius Pilate. When he reads the charges, he says, "Do you not hear all of the charges that have been leveled against you? Have you nothing to say for yourself? Do you not realize that I have the power to free you?" The only words that Jesus uttered to him, uttered in response to that, he says, "You would have no power whatsoever over me, lest it's been given you from heaven above." So Jesus confirms that all earthly authority comes from God. In essence, God is in charge. And in God's providence, he allows for certain things to happen in such a way it doesn't appear on the surface to be something of our benefit at the time. How does it? I mean, I know as a child coming up when I was receiving discipline, at the time when I was receiving the discipline of my mother and father, it didn't appear to be for my benefit at the time. I didn't feel like it. I didn't like it one bit. But as I grew beyond the period of discipline, when that discipline was meted out and I received it and began to look back, using the faculties of my soul to remember what was told to me before I disobeyed my parents to render such a discipline, then I would begin to exercise my imagination in a manner that would truly be in keeping with the freedom I had to choose the good relative to the evil. Oh, yeah. So what the Lord is saying to you and to I today, in every instance of our life on this earth, what is required to render unto the earthly authority what they, in essence, need in order to govern in a manner that truly is going to be for the welfare of the common good that they have been entrusted with, and also to give to God what belongs solely to God. It requires hearts that are not divided. It requires a disposition that is not self-serving and self-seeking. It requires one choosing not to be hypocritical, as Jesus declares the Pharisees. Hypocritical in that, coming from the Greek term, which means wearing a mask, playing a part, acting in a manner that truly is not in keeping with what who one truly is. Externally, their actions, their appearance presented them as being so faithful to God, such excellent practitioners of the law of God. But in reality, they were all about themselves. They had a hidden agenda, and Jesus was an obstacle to them. And yet Jesus' response to their question was not one in which he was trying to do away with them, but rather he was trying to open their minds yet again. Give him his coin. And in the process, give to God what is for God. Your whole heart, your whole mind, all your soul. Love your God. In the ways in which you interact with one another, in the way in which you exercise your authority over God's holy people, in the ways in which you pay taxation to the worldly leadership, that taxation allows them to protect and secure what's necessary for the populace of the people to live wholesome, wholesome, productive lives. Jesus is not presenting us with a demarcation between the state and the church, or the church and the state, and he's certainly not trying to compartmentalize the things of the secular world that belong to the secular world. And in other words, everything that belongs to the spheres of politics is in the public sphere, and what belongs to religion is in the private sphere. Not at all. Jesus is not saying that at all. In being dutiful and responsible in your citizenry on the earth, you're also being faithful to your God. Now, when that earthly authority grasps for something that is not theirs, when they are trying to impose upon the people entrusted to them things that are germane to God and God alone, then the problem arises. And then we have witness after witness of those who believe in the one true God, of how they have exercised heroic virtue. Citizens of this earth, such as St. Maximilian Kolbe, who took the place of the Jewish prisoner who cried out for mercy as one had escaped the prison camp in Auschwitz. And the commandant of the camp wanted to exact an example. He took 10 arbitrary men. He just told them, he said, for this guy's escape, 10 men will be put to death. And Maximilian Kolbe, when this man was crying, he says, put me in, I want to take his, who is this? He says, the commandant said, who is this? Who is this dog? He says, my name is Maximilian Kolbe. I'm a Catholic priest and I desire to take this man's place. And so he did. And in so doing, he championed the cause of God and served as a very real reminder of what lawful authority governed, how it should govern and how it looks when it's truly in keeping with what God expects of all of humanity, whether the leadership of the world knows it or not. It all comes from God and all is going back. So the biggest problem with what Jesus is saying for the Pharisees, and in fact for all of humanity, which has been impacted by sin, which causes what? Division within one's heart, and that division leads to self-centered, self-seeking endeavor, is that in order to render to the Caesars of the world what they need and what God desires, one must be selfless in such a way that they think of the other first and foremost before they give to them, before they think of themselves. To give to what the world needs and to give to what God desires requires a selfless person. No wonder St. Paul says Jesus did not look at his equality with God something to be grasped at, but rather he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being found in the likeness of humanity. And it was on the basis of this that God highly exalted him, raised him up, and gave him a name above every other name, in such a way that there is no name in heaven, on earth, or under the earth by which humanity can be saved. For at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bend and every tongue shall confess to the glory of God the Father that Jesus Christ is Lord. He's Lord. And we prove his lordship when we follow his example, when it's convenient for us and when it's not. This week, Hopefully at our very fair, we're going to be handling currency that has the image of presidents that have long have come and gone. Basically, we have the pictures of dead presidents. We have pictures of dead presidents on our currency. We'll be exchanging that for goods. As we do, realize that your soul and mine has an image impressed upon it as well, the image of God. And whenever we look at that currency and we give it, make sure that we're remembering that we ought to be giving our lives away in such a way that the image of God is manifest for all to behold, and that they may behold it in such a way that they may come to believe in the one true God, the Lord of heaven and earth. God love you.